Hello, and welcome to the first of three exciting NABW teleseminars that we are hosting this month. In a moment, I will be introducing today's guest, Leanne Jashue, but first, let me introduce myself and do a bit of housekeeping, if you don't mind. For those of you who don't know me, oh, thank you. For those of you who don't know me, I am Ann Holmes, and I call myself the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com. And we have a sister site, which is a forum, at boomerwomenspeak.com. That's boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found on the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, and I know that you may not be, you're welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW website, which you can use to join. This teleseminar is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have approximately 70 teleseminars, which we've done in the past, which are available via written transcript and audio recording. These are yours with membership in NABBW. Anyone can listen to the live calls, but the recordings are only available to the members. I've mentioned that we're doing three teleseminars this month, so just a quick word on the upcoming events. Next Wednesday, July 28th, we will be talking to Emily Upham and Linda Gravenson, authors of In the Fullness of Time, 32 Women on Life After 50, about what they call the elephant in the room, which is aging. They talk to some wonderful women about the whole concept of aging, and so I think that the opportunity to hear what they learned from their authors should be quite fun. That call will be held early in the day instead of our normal evening time. It will be 11 a.m. Eastern time, which is 10 a.m. Central, and, of course, going down the line down to 8 a.m. Pacific time. And then the very next day, Thursday, July 29th, we will be talking to Margaret May Damon, author of Women, Wealth, and Giving, on How to Transform Your World, Deed by Deed, The Boomer Way. That call will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and Margaret will be covering philanthropy, why and how every woman can and should be one, how to choose an organization when you're doing philanthropic activities, what you should know when making your choice, talking about the tax benefits and why the world needs more women well, that's a hard word to say. why the world needs more women who are into philanthropy. We'll just call it that. Now, let me get back to talking about our call today. Lost my place here. Okay, before I do that, I do hope that you'll be on these calls as well, because they're all free teleseminars like this one and will be well worth listening to, I believe. Now, as the format for today's call, many of you have asked me to go over the format so you know when you'll be able to have a chance to talk. I will be introducing today's guest, Leanne Jashue, in a moment, and then she and I will spend about 30 minutes discussing laughter, which I think should be a really fun time. Specifically, we're talking about how you can let go with laughter, and after that, we'll open the call to your questions. So please be thinking of questions and don't be shy. Now, without further delay, let me introduce today's guest, Leanne Jashue, and we'll launch right into our discussion.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, and I'm very happy to be participating in this teleconference.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Would you like me to tell the people anything about your background, Leanne?
Well, why don't you do that, and then I'll chime in if I remember anything else.
Okay. You might have left the best parts out, you know, before, so you could...
That's right.
Tell us those stuff. All right. Leanne has initials after her name, as many of us do. Hers are MPH, which she says is Master of Public Health or Mistress of Public Humor. I think she means both of those. She's a stress management and humor expert who helps women and men manage stress, embrace change, and become healthier by learning to lighten up. She speaks at 50 to 60 conferences and workshops every year, which by my count means that she's talking to people at least once a week, and has been a national speaking of women's health and healthy women keynoter. She's a member of the National Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. Leanne is the author of 16 books and the 2003 winner of the National Irma Bomback Humor Writing Award for her true story on how her first mammogram caught on fire. I'd love to hear that. I think that's just amazing. She teaches at both the University of Oregon and Lane Community College, runs a comedy troupe, is a humor columnist for the Register Guards Dash magazine, and is the former host of Women Under the Influence of Laughter on KOPT 1600 AM radio. In November, Leanne's musical, Busting Out, will be produced in Eugene, Oregon. And in her spare time, she says that she tries to remember where she parked. I'd like to know where you have any spare time, Leanne.
I was going to say, it sounds like I do a lot, but really my real job is opening and closing the door for my wiener dog, so I don't know how I get anything else done, because that takes a lot of my time. But yeah, I have been teaching people to use a sense of humor in their everyday life to manage stress and become healthier, primarily because about 18 years ago, I accidentally found my sense of humor, and it totally changed my life. And so I know that, you know, anybody who has fallen into that rut of thinking that life is so serious all the time tends to get, you know, really stressed out both physically and emotionally. And women are so much worse.
That's fascinating, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, if you don't think you have a sense of humor, is it possible to develop one? So you're saying absolutely yes.
Every human being is born with a sense of humor. In fact, researchers say that every mammal, and that includes rats, and if you've never done it, go on YouTube and look up rats laughing. And they actually have video clips of the scientists who are tickling rats' bellies, and they sound just like infant children laughing. It's a wonderful, funny video to listen to. But every mammal has a sense of humor, and it serves two purposes. One is to bond with others of our species, and the other is to release tension and stress. And that's why it's there. And so, you know, it makes perfect sense that we would use it when we're under those situations. Unfortunately, you know, in today's world with so much stress coming at us, a lot of us bury our sense of humor really deeply and think that we're totally void of having one. And that's just not true. I've been teaching comedy writing and stand-up as cheap therapy for 16 years, and I've had people who didn't think they had a sense of humor at least come out laughing more. I can't say that everybody has the same equal sense of humor, but we all have it. We just need to use it. It's like, you know, it's use it or lose it, like anything else in life.
Fascinating.
And unfortunately, you know, nobody's out there giving us exercises. We know what we're supposed to do for our weight training, especially as we get older. We keep, you know, getting information on we need to do weight-bearing exercises, and we need to do this much aerobic exercise, and we need to eat this many things out of this many categories. But nobody is telling us, you know, you get the same kind of physical and emotional benefits if you do this much laughter a day. And so that's why I'm here, is to talk about that.
Well, I'm so glad that we have you on the call, because we could certainly all know about this and need to know about it, I believe.
Right. And so I said that women are worse. We are more stressed. How many women out there did not know that already? But now scientists, researchers, psychologists say it's true. And the problem is, a lot of the reason we're so stressed is because we do it to ourselves. Some of it is the way we're wired. So let me just quickly, can I cover a couple of those points right there?
Oh,
because
please,
I think,
please do.
Okay. Oh, first of all, the way we do it to ourselves is one of the things is, do you remember the study about 15 years ago that said women were better at multitasking? And
yes.
What did we women go do? We went out and multitasked more to prove how good we were at it. And now, of course, they say there's no such thing as multitasking. It's attention shifting. And even though women are better at it, if you're doing 15 things at the same time versus two things at the same time, who's going to have more stress? The person juggling more balls. And so women,
right.
Exactly, women tend to be the one that take more on, and so more things go wrong, and so we have more stress. But one of the other things ties directly into our need to nurture, and that is, I talk about how we all have a big purse, a big bag full of stress. And the older we get, the more things are in it, because, you know, as we get older, we have more life experience, and a lot of it is stressful. But we are the gender that will go up to someone else and say, go ahead, put some of your stress in my bag. I'll carry it for you for a while. Men don't do that, not typically. Some mm-hmm. caregiver type men do, but it's just kind of a genetic predisposition of women. We also have brains that are wired differently so that many of our memories are tied directly to our emotions. And so it's really hard for us to let go of things because they have emotion to us. Whereas guys, the part of their brain that has memory in it is not so strongly connected to memory, and it's easier for them to let go. So for many reasons, we have more stress and we perceive more things stressful. Fortunately, women laugh more than men.
I didn't know that.
In America, we laugh 126% as often as men. But we're faking it a lot.
Okay.
And that's not bad because actually faking laughter gets you most of the physical and emotional benefits of just doing it. It's like you can fake exercising as long as you're in the gym, you're still going to get the workout. The same is true with faking laughter. But I say we're faking it a lot because that same nurturing predisposition that we have means that if little Johnny has told the same joke 27 times, we are more likely than his dad or his granddad to laugh at it again, to say to that person, you know, we admire and support your trying to be funny. So women often use their sense of humor as a way to grow closer to people. In fact, there was a really funny study done in, I think it was Self magazine a few years back, and they asked men and women what they meant when they were looking for someone with a sense of humor in their personal ads. What do you think it meant? What do you think men mean when they say, I want someone with a sense of humor?
Someone who will laugh at their jokes.
Exactly. And what do women mean?
Perhaps something different, but I'm...
Someone who will make us laugh.
Okay.
So we even have a different definition of what sense of humor is. And so even though women are laughing more, it doesn't keep pace with the amount of stress. So let's say we have 5 times as much stress as the average male, and we're only laughing 26% more, 126% equals 26% more. That's as much math as I can do in the afternoon. But so we're not keeping up with our stress. The other thing, there was a big study that came out of Stanford University a couple of years back that said that men and women actually cope with stress differently. And we've been kind of told over the decades that the way that humans and other animals respond to stress is called fight or flight. And that is true. But women go to something else first, and they call it tend and befriend, which sounds great. It sounds like we're so smart. But really what tend means is that we take care of things so that when other parts of our lives feel out of control, we'll clean out the junk drawer, we'll sweep the garage, do the laundry. It doesn't necessarily mean we're taking care of ourselves. The befriend part is good because to surround yourself with people who are your friends is definitely a great way to reduce stress, especially if they make you laugh.
Okay.
So that's kind of why men and women are somewhat different in the way we perceive stress and the way that we reduce stress and the way we use humor. And, you know, for a long time, there was I teach another class at the University of Oregon called Comedy and Media. And Christopher Hitchens, about 2 years ago, wrote an article that said women don't have a sense of humor, which was really funny to me. And basically, it's because society has kind of defined sense of humor in terms of telling jokes and creating stories as what men do. In fact, the majority of people who are stand-up comics and write sitcoms, even the majority of people writing funny greeting cards, and we know greeting cards are meant to be purchased by women to give to women. The majority of writers are men. And so they have a different sense of humor, and it's more competitive-oriented and often a little more scatological and edgy than women's. And women's sense of humor tends to be a little more relationship-oriented. That doesn't mean that there are women who like dirty comedy, there are men who like relationship comedy, but we have a difference in the way that we're putting our sense of humor out there. And women tend to rely on funny stories that we share with our friends, but when we're under too much stress, we don't do that. we kind of stop trying to be funny.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So would you, I don't want to distract you from where you were
going.
No,
you go.
Does this mean that greeting card companies, if women are buying cards to give to women, should we not have women be writing the cards?
Well, as a greeting card writer, I've been trying to convince people of that for years, as have some of the other women who do write greeting cards. But, you know, it's, I guess the idea is that men have been the people creating the humor, and so many of them have developed a good understanding. I totally think that women, it's easier for women to write for women in terms of humor, but, you know, greeting cards are selling like crazy, and I buy a lot of them, so I guess you just have to look to find one that speaks directly to your own sense of humor. In fact, that's one of my biggest tips. If you're having a really stressful day, stop somewhere and read funny greeting cards, because if you look well, you will find some that make you laugh, and they do it so quickly, whereas, you know, you watch a movie that's supposed to be funny, and even if it's something you know that made you laugh the last time, you still have to wade through 90 minutes for a couple of laughs. With greeting cards, if you do it well, you can stand there and get laugh after laugh.
Interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah, what we need to do is we just need to have a plan, and that's just part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Georgia Richardson, who's my virtual assistant and also one of our NABBW associates,
and she's so funny.
She was recently talking about cheering herself up with music. So I guess maybe it's the beat of the music, or maybe the music reminds us of stories of things that happened in the past.
I'm the same way. I have happy music that I use, I rely on too. But because here's the thing, is the majority of things that we laugh at are not funny. The majority of times that we laugh, we're feeling playful. If you look at small children, so the average American 5-year-old child laughs approximately 400 times a day. Mm-hmm. The average American grown-up, it's 15. And if you look at what 5-year-olds are laughing at, they're not telling jokes. They're not doing things intentionally to be funny. They're laughing mostly when they're playing. And so what that kind of music does, I'm thinking as I saw Georgia's list, I actually looked at that and contributed some of my favorite songs, is it puts us in a playful mindset. For example, Jimmy Buffett does that for me. Mm-hmm. Puts me in, you know, I feel like I'm on vacation, and I'm kind of a parrot head anyway. That's, for those of you who don't know, that's a follower of Jimmy Buffett. But it makes you feel playful. And when you feel playful, you're more likely to laugh at things, whether they're quote-unquote funny or not. In fact, one study found that when two people are talking and there's laughter, we're not laughing at something the other person said or did. We're laughing at the words that come out of our own mouth. So laughter is a very interesting experience that humans and mammals share.
Interesting. Now, how do other mammals actually laugh? I mean,
yeah, we wouldn't recognize
my dog,
right?
Laugh,
you're not going to recognize your cat laughing. You know, I tried, so I can tell you how dogs laugh because that's what I have. So it's when they get in play position, you know, their chest down, their tail up, tail wagging. And if you listen really close, you'll hear something that sounds like it's labored breathing. It's kind of So what the scientists have said, if you want to try to make your dogs laugh, you're supposed to get down on their level and make that sound for a long time. So I have wiener dogs. So one day I'm on my belly on the floor because that's their level, going and the door's open, and the UPS man shows up. Now, that is guaranteed way to make the UPS man laugh. But, yeah, we won't recognize it. It looks more like what we say is playful spirit. You know, we know when a dog is playful. We know when a cat is playful. Because playfulness and sense of humor are just strongly bound together. That's why we see that in five-year-olds. Five-year-olds are so smart. They know when mom says, come in for dinner, and their response is, I'm not done having fun yet. That's an important thing for human beings, and we just forget.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only is it good to do and it feels good, but the physical benefits are amazing. I mean, it reduces your risk of heart disease. It enhances your immune system. It tones your abs. 1 minute of belly laughing is the equivalent in terms of abdominal toning of 25 sit-ups. Now,
oh, wow.
I know. Personally, I don't think we all need to have abs like a washboard. I have abs like a dashboard. Well, they're soft and padded with a built-in airbag, so I don't bruise anything when I run into stuff. But and recently there was a study that showed that laughter after a meal can reduce your people who have type 2 diabetes, their post-meal blood sugar spike by up to a quarter. It's an amazing thing what laughter can do, but it's not so amazing if you think that physiologically the reason we have a sense of humor is to release tension. So, of course, it's going to make things better that get worse when you're under stress.
Mm-hmm.
It also reduces depression and anxiety and fear. The problem is when you're depressed, anxious, and fearful, nothing seems funny or playful to you. So the idea, the reason to have a plan to use your sense of humor to manage stress is to help you from getting into those deeper, darker emotions over things that are not worth it. And I think so much of our time, we take little tiny events in our lives and we blow them out of proportion and create stress around them that shouldn't be there. They should just be let go.
Okay. Is there a way that you can overcome if you find yourself that you've delved into that darker area of depression and nothing seems funny? Is there a way that you can use laughter to bring people out of that?
Well, there definitely is. But it's difficult. That is the most difficult. For example, I put on an annual competition that's called the Laugh Off, and it's basically comedians in my community who are not professional, and it's a benefit for our humane society. 2 years ago, our winner had just been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he got up there and did jokes about this diagnosis and what it meant to him, and he was extremely funny, but it was very hard for us as an audience to feel that we had permission to laugh, because this is something that is, you know, one of those big stressors in life.
Right.
And it was hard for him, too. So a better idea is, first of all, so I'll start from the top of the bag. So basically, I have this book called How'd All These Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag, The Stressed Out Woman's Guide to Letting Go with Laughter. And I talk about that bag of stress, and it has three kinds of balls. There's bowling balls, and those are the heavy ones, and we'll talk about those in a minute. We all know what those are. It's like, you know, divorce, loss of a child, loss of a relationship, loss of a job, the things that really cause us severe psychic pain. The smaller ones right above that are the tennis balls. And the problem with tennis balls is they're kind of moderate things. Like, I had frozen shoulder syndrome for 2 years. And that's a common, I don't know if the listeners know this, but it's very common among menopausal women. I don't know why, but I've been told that this is a common thing. And so I couldn't move my arm more than about a couple of inches for 2 years, and I was right in the middle of hot flashes. And a hot flashing woman who cannot get out of a jacket without help, that's not a good thing. I know it was. And so when you're in something that's a tennis ball, it seems like a bowling ball, but it has an end point. That's the difference. It's anybody who has teenagers at home, they often seem like bowling balls. But eventually they'll move out, and then given this economy, they'll probably move back in, and then they'll move out again. But so there's an end point to the tennis balls. The ping pong balls, though, the little tiny lightweight things that don't belong in our bag of stress at all, that's what causes our bag to get full and doesn't leave us enough room for the major stresses, which is so if your bag is full of little things, you know, if you get as upset about a paper jam in your printer as you do getting into a fender bender that, you know, actually causes some injury, then that's looking at a ping pong ball as something bigger and not letting it go. And unfortunately, life doesn't give us many bowling balls at a time, but it gives us lots of ping pong balls all the time, all those things that go wrong. And so the idea is, if you can laugh off the ping pong balls, not let them in your bag in the first place, then you have more room in the bag for the bowling balls and it's easier to carry them. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So for I give as an example, I was in a parking lot at a grocery store. My dogs were in the car. It was cool. I highly recommend no dogs in the car in the summer ever.
Right.
But it was cool. It was in the fall, and I had to go in for a couple of minutes to buy my soy milk. And the wiener dogs know there's one rule of dogs in the car, and that is dogs stay in the back. Mm-hmm. And I got about 10 feet away, and I heard the violation of rule number one, and so I turned, and I said, stay. And a man behind me said, I just put my car in park, which was hysterical. But a lot of people would have chosen to be humiliated by being caught talking to their car and walked into the store with their tails between their legs, because humiliation and embarrassment are two of the things, along with frustration and annoyance, that most of our ping pong balls are. And I turned around, and this is a funny guy, and we had a funny conversation for 5 minutes, and it released a lot more than just a humiliation tennis ball, a lot of the other things that had gone wrong before me. So it's just a matter of having a plan for understanding your own sense of humor. And when it comes to the bowling balls, so going back to your original question, if you find yourself down there, the major thing is to give yourself permission to find humor in anything you want to or do find humor in. My best friend died of cancer 3 years ago. And she asked us to come and put on sketches and sing silly songs while she was having chemotherapy. And she understood that for the rest of her life, she wanted to maximize the fun. And so she gave herself permission. She gave us permission to do that. And so it really, you know, we've, as a society, we're very serious about certain things. And we tell ourselves that you're not allowed to find humor in X, Y, and Z when, you know, one of the most popular episodes ever of Mary Tyler Moore, for example, was the one where the clown died and they all cracked up at the funeral. I don't know if you remember that, but
I do remember that one.
Yeah, and that really speaks to something that's deep within us, because if the purpose of our sense of humor is to release tension and anxiety, nothing makes us more tense and anxious than the thought of death. And so, you know, as we get older, we start facing illnesses and consequences that we haven't faced as we were younger, especially when we start losing friends. And so it's even more important to get in touch with being able to use your humor skills on purpose rather than just relying for things to make you laugh.
Excellent. And do we need to always give ourselves permission to use our humor in this way?
Basically, I can see no reason other than abdominal surgery not to give yourself permission to laugh at everything for your own wellness. Now, if you're in a circumstance where other people's feelings might get hurt by your laughter, then you need to moderate that. Mm-hmm. But for your own sake, what, you know, if you go home and you want to laugh at her, I have to tell you, with all the conferences I do, people always come up and tell me stories afterwards. And the majority of stories that they tell me about how they used laughter are about very sad circumstances. I was recently at a caregiver's retreat, and this woman had seen me the year before at a different retreat. And she said that her husband had died in the house. It had been expected. He'd been in hospice. And it had been very tense and very sad for a long time. And he passed, and she called 911 or the morgue or whoever she needed to call to come pick him up. And she thought, the first thing she thought to herself is, now I can finally admit how much my wedding gown really cost. So she whispered to her now dead husband that she said, honey, the dress was three times more than I told you it cost. And she started to laugh hysterically. And she said when the people came to pick up his body, she was still laughing. And she said, thank God they thought it was just widow's hysteria of some kind, which is what it was. Hysteria is a way of venting. It's just as a good way of venting emotion as crying, which is why we laugh and cry often at the same time.
All right. That makes more sense now than I ever could understand why we have the situation of being happy and crying at the same time. So
right. Yeah, I mean, and I have to say, when my best friend's funeral, she asked me to do stand-up comedy, and I cried and laughed at the highest rate I've ever done at the same time, and it was totally cathartic. It was very good for me, and since she had asked me to do it, it was, you know, very good for her family. So.
Mhm. And
but, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is that something that you've ever heard of anyone else doing,
yes.
the funeral type of thing?
Oh, yes, many. You hear about these things if you talk about them, but as a society, you know, we don't talk about death much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about illness much, except to whine and complain about our own personal things. And I'm not saying I don't do that. We all do that. But, yeah, I've heard of many people doing it. And I've heard of people requesting it. The guy who did the comedy about his pancreatic cancer, he sold ad space on his urns.
Really?
He sold four ads. He's got two urns because he's a big guy and he decided to have two urns. Sold four ad spaces on his urns to make some money to pay for the costs. He developed a line of T-shirts for people with cancer, and one of them I purchased for a friend of mine who'd recently had a mastectomy, and it said, of course they're fake, my other ones tried to kill me, which to me is it's hysterical about something really sad. And and my girlfriend who got it said, you know, thank you for reminding me, you know, how important laughter is, and I'm going to wear it, so... But
excellent.
It doesn't have to, we don't have to get down to those. We can, it's much easier right now if everybody starts letting the little things go. And I once got cut off by a guy in a large vehicle who just did something illegal in traffic. And before I had a chance to get frustrated, I noticed he had a bumper sticker that said, "Mean people suck," on the back of his truck. And because of that bumper sticker and because I gave myself permission to, rather than get angry, which causes all kinds of physical damage and emotional damage, to choose to laugh at that bumper sticker and the fact that I was pretty sure he hadn't put it on them on the back of his truck himself.
Oh, okay.
So I let that ball go. Yeah, I thought, you know, I got a story in my mind about a neighbor going under cover of darkness and putting it on to warn the world about this guy. And so my mind went on a little journey that didn't allow me time to put another ping pong ball in my bag.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, now, you talked about little kids and laughing, and you talked about that as we age, we don't laugh as much. The numbers that you just cited earlier there were amazing to me. How much?
Yeah. Well, most people are amazed. When I ask people to guess how many times adults laugh, they guess like two.
Mm-hmm.
Or four. So they're amazed that it's 15. And the reason it's as high as 15 is that in the study that this came from, 40% of these 1,000 people that they evaluated only laughed once a day, and 40% laughed up to 90 times a day. So it's the people who laugh a lot, like myself, who are really dragging a lot of very serious people up.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing that's good for boomers.
Mm-hmm.
For boomer women in particular, we laugh a lot when we're kids. There's a whole developmental timetable, just like, you know, you expect your child to walk and be potty trained and talk at different ages. Sense of humor follows a developmental timetable. And by the time we're in high school, a lot of people kind of turn their sense of humor inward and hold on to it, and then it comes back. But it doesn't come back at the level of five-year-olds until we get to be in our 60s and 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the great things about aging is when you lose that desire to really care about what other people think about you, you're willing to give yourself permission to do what entertains you and to laugh at what makes you laugh.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I've always remembered a situation, and I've never really discussed it with anyone else, but it was a situation where my mother lives in Arizona, and I went down to visit her. She has moved down there because my stepfather's parents lived down there. Well, his father and stepmother had lived down there, and they were living in a nursing home. In fact, my stepfather's father is 102. He's still alive. But,
wow.
But when I went down there, this was maybe 10 years ago or so, I met Harris, my step-grandfather, and his wife, and she has since died, but she said to me, doesn't Harris have the cutest ass? And she said, that's why I married him. I just love his ass. And I'm thinking, I can't believe she's saying this, but yeah, you know, this is funny. So I went along with it. I chuckled. I agreed that he did, although I really hadn't noticed because he was wearing a suit. It doesn't really show.
It's not
up
something
too well.
You're looking for, right?
Right, yes. But later on, my mother was talking about this, and she was saying, well, one of the problems that Maxine, this woman's name was Maxine, one of the problems that we knew that she was getting dementia was that she says inappropriate things.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's
so
a five-year-old again.
Right.
I know my mother-in-law, who passed away a couple of years ago, she had dementia too, and so she lived in a dementia care center, and so all of the people there no longer had those inner sensors, and so what's the emotion that it evokes in most of the rest of us? Humiliation. We're totally embarrassed by them, but for them, they're as happy as can be,
right,
in the way that they're thinking about those kinds of things.
Well, certainly, you know, you'd look at her, and you know, she did not look like anything but, you know, a proper matriarch, you know. So for
right.
her to say this to me just cracked me up. And then my mother later telling me, "Well, you shouldn't have laughed at that. That was inappropriate." I'm like, "But I can't help
Ooh,
it. It was funny."
I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things I tell people that is the worst, you know, there's many bad words to string together to say to children. One of them is, "That's not funny." Because we only say that to youngsters when they're laughing, so that we become a voice in their head in the future that says, "You cannot trust your own sense of humor. You must stifle." Remember Archie Bunker always told Edith
right.
to stifle?
Yeah, stifle. It was
and
one of his favorite words.
So they may be laughing at something mean-spirited and inappropriate, and we need to direct them and say things such as, "We don't laugh at something mean-spirited and inappropriate like that." But you never say that's not funny to someone, because you don't get to be the judge of what's funny for somebody else. And I really try to make a point of that in whatever I'm teaching, because so much of the time other people try to tell us what's funny to us. And we're the only people who know what makes us sad, whether we like broccoli, you know.
Right.
We get to make that judgment call. And so if you cannot become a voice in someone else's head. But when you were talking about your the 102-year-olds in your life, I
right.
thought of Betty White and her resurgence as a comedian. And I really think that's a great thing to happen in our society right now, is not only for the picture of women that it provides, because here she is, what is she, 88?
I think she's 88, yes.
88, she's spry and funny as ever, but it's also reinforcement of the importance of humor, because I truly believe that one of the reasons that so many of the comedians have lived so long is because they have learned to take the negatives and turn them funny. And that releases a lot of balls from that bag of stress, and it makes us physically healthier.
Makes sense.
Totally, it's my plan. It's my anti-aging plan. Wearing my hair in pigtails, dog slobber, and laughing a lot. That's it. I believe that dog slobber may cure crow's feet.
I was just hearing somebody talking about today. What were they talking about? Something about germs, and they were talking about, you know, the importance of. If your dog licks your face, that, you know, you really need to get the antiseptic wipe and clean yourself off. And I'm going, come on, you know.
Did you not? It just came out like 4 days ago, and I can't remember if it was Science, but it was reported in my paper that you're more likely to get germs from your dog by petting them and not washing your hands than by letting them lick your face. You're much safer having them lick your face. Still, don't share your toothbrush with them. You know, don't push it.
No. No, I think I did hear that on the Today Show or something. They were talking about petting your dog, that the dog brings in all kinds of stuff from outdoors that's on their fur. And
yeah.
I didn't really ever find out how they were telling me. Oh, I know. They didn't really tell me how to clean the fur. They just said wash my hands a lot I was going to pet the dog. So.
But, you know, here's the thing is there's gains and risks in anything. And pets are one of the things that create the most laughter in our lives. I probably laugh 5 times while I'm still in bed at something my dogs are doing. And so, you know, I'm willing to take a few germs. if I'm going to get all the positive physical benefits, because one of the physical benefits of laughter is it's enhancing my immune system, so I don't need so much antibacterial stuff because I have a powerful immune system. Oh, and it also raises endorphins. I had a breast lump removed a couple of years ago, and afterwards they gave me, you know, a prescription for medication and instructions on icing, and I actually got kicked out. I brought a friend with me. It was day surgery. I got kicked out of the hospital because we were too loud laughing. And afterwards, I took no drugs and had no icing, and I was totally fine. And I think it's because I've had this experience with a lot of pain. I don't have much, and I think it's because my endorphins are in overdrive because I'm always laughing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think at the top of the call, I started to say, and then corrected myself, so we got stop of the call. But at the top of the call, I think you said that in the early part of your life that you didn't think that you were as funny. So,
I tell people that I wasn't voted class clown in high school. Had there been such a category, I'd have been voted most likely to depress people. My role models in high school were Sylvia Plath and Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
These are not funny people. I was 32 when I accidentally discovered my sense of humor. I was in therapy for my first divorce, and the therapist, I went twice because that's all my HMO would cover. And the therapist said, you need to learn how to have fun, because basically my parents got divorced early and I had to be mom. And so I grew up really fast. And I really never had much of a childhood, which explains a lot. So I didn't know how to go out and have fun. So I randomly selected something out of a community college catalog, and I landed on a stand-up comedy class. And I'd never even really listened to a stand-up comic before. Now I've listened to everybody that was popular when I was a kid, but I had never really done that. And that's one of the reasons I'm so gung-ho about teaching people to unbury their sense of humor, is because I know that it works so well for me. My college roommate, when I called her to tell her what I was doing, she didn't believe that it was really me because it sounded so different from who I was when she knew me.
Okay.
This is why my website is accidentalcomic.com, because it was an accident.
I had been wondering why you came up with that name. So there must be a good story to that. And the story is what you've just told us, or is there more to it?
Yeah. Everything in my life that has happened well has been an accident. And I'm just really open to, there's no such things as accidents. There's just possibilities that disguise themselves. And so that was one of them. The other one is I decided to move across country and become a comedian and comedic speaker on accident, because I accidentally bought a house while on vacation. I had no intention of doing it. It just happened. And so I had to move clear across the country to where my house was. Quit my job, left behind everything I'd been doing for the last 12 years, and decided to make a go of this.
Wow. It must have been quite a house.
It's a 1,000 square foot house, and I'm still in it. But it had a creek in the backyard. That was the thing.
Okay.
I needed to be next to water, apparently.
Oh, I'm a big fan of being next to water. I'm not living next to water at the moment, but that's my goal in life, is to get myself to look out my window and see water, and not that it's rain.
Yeah. Well, I have that too, being in Oregon.
Right.
Although it's very sunny today. But so the thing is that anybody can start using the tools of turning their sense of humor on their stressors. In fact, when people write jokes, so people who write jokes for a living like I do, I mean, that's another piece of my life, as I write greeting cards and post-it notes and aprons and doormats and coffee mugs and things like that. The most written humor comes from negative emotions, and so it's a device that allows you to turn something that feels bad into something that feels good. And there's a saying that comedians wake up in the morning hoping for things to go wrong, so we'll have something to write about. And it's a really great kind of attitude about life, to think that when something does go wrong, you will have something to laugh at. If not then, at least sometime.
Right. Okay. Well, I know we're getting very close to the time when I want to open the call up, and so I think I'm going to click the
button. I'm fine with that.
And open it up to interactive mode so all guests can talk.
Okay.
And anyone can jump in and ask a question. But let me lead with a question and ask, how did you, as you turned yourself into a comedic person from your accidental encounter with becoming a comedic person, how did you decide to take on things like becoming a greeting card writer or a coffee mug quip writer, or, you know, how does one find someone who will pay you money for doing this, and how do you develop that skill?
Well, you know, the first thing I did when I moved here to Eugene was I wrote for a joke writing service because they paid $1 a joke, and I figured you must not have to be very good if that's all you were making, so the intimidation factor was low. And it helped me develop this skill of writing really short jokes, because all of those things like bumper stickers and stuff require really short jokes. And I have a problem with commitment. I wrote one novel, and I think that'll be it, because it took way too much of my time. And so this writing short things, it's much less intimidating to your ego if you fail at it, because it doesn't take that much out of you, whereas if you devote yourself for 20 years writing something like a novel or a self-help book that you're really invested in, and then it doesn't go as well as you anticipated, it's really a hurtful thing on the psyche. But if you write 27 jokes and you send them off every week and they don't buy them, it's not that much of an investment. And so that's why I kind of opened the door with greeting cards and post-it notes and bumper stickers, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually teach classes where I teach people how to write like that. I have another book called Yoga for Your Funny Bone that's really exercises on learning how to write funny. And the purpose is both for people who want to write funny, so writers who want to add humor to their writing, whatever style you write, humor is a very good tool, and for people who want to rewrite their life and focus on the things that were funny, because right now I'm teaching a humorous memoir class, and that's what we're doing in there.
Excellent. I know that I meant to mention the books that you've written in more detail when I did your intro, but I was so anxious to get into actually talking to you that I kind of skipped over that. But
I like that more.
Okay. Well, I'm curious, you know, there's the book that you mentioned, How'd All These Ping Pong Balls in My Bag, The Stress Out Woman's Guide to Letting Go with Laughter, but a couple other ones have some real intriguing titles. One of them, Don't Get Mad, Get Funny, and then there has to be some good stories behind how you got Not Guilty by Reason of Menopause. And I'm
the story is I was having a hot flash.
And then I'm thinking that the bedtime stories for dogs must come from the fact that you have two dogs.
Well, and in fact, Bedtime Stories for Dogs is my best-selling book of all time, because people actually read them to their dogs, and that's what I did, is I wrote them to be read to dogs. I wrote a companion to be read to cats, but it doesn't sell as well because I don't think cats sit still long enough to listen. They're always hiding under the bed or in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
But basically my goal in writing is to help people laugh, and so I have done this, and I'm very much a dog lover, and so I write a lot in the animal field. And I'm very much a female who is now postmenopausal, and so Not Guilty by Reason of Menopause came from my experience of using comedy to laugh at menopause. So it's a gift book for menopausal women.
Okay.
And Don't Get Mad, Get Funny was my first stress management book, and it's kind of a companion piece to How'd All These Ping Pong Balls Get in My Bag. The two of them together cover everything I have ever learned about humor and stress management so far, because the field is great. They continue to make new discoveries regularly.
Well, that's the fact that there is so much stress in the world, and I don't see any way that it's going to lessen. We all have to figure out how to manage it, or else, obviously, I believe we are believing now and understanding that it kills us. So.
It absolutely does. You know, it doesn't stamp itself across our chest and say that stress killed you. But, I mean, we know that in Japan they actually have people who kill themselves on the job because of stress. I mean, it's a very significant component to why people get sick. They say that up to 90% of all the reasons we seek health care have too much stress as a statistically significant component. 90%? That's a lot of stressing out we're doing. So, but I have a great tip. Is there somebody waiting to ask a question?
Speak up. I've got the call line open. Anybody, you can talk and then tell your tip, and then we'll be quiet.
Here's
a
great tip.
One
of the ways to get your sense of humor back is to quit listening to people who are trying to make you angry. So many people listen to talk radio, and I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, because it's anger solicitation on both sides of the political spectrum. We are angry enough as a society. We don't need anybody helping us be more angry. And so if on your ride to work you're listening to somebody just trying to foment your ire about what's going on in the world, of course that's the way you're going to feel. So my suggestion is, not only don't listen to talk radio, but not to listen to the news first thing in the morning or last thing at night. Because first thing in the morning sets your tone for your mood, and last thing at night sets your tone for your ability to sleep. And so that's a great place to put humor. So all I have to do is look at myself in the mirror in the morning and I get a big laugh. But you can do something else. You can play with your animals. You can play with your children or grandchildren. You can read something that you always find funny. And at night, don't watch the news, and don't watch CSI or any of those other shows that, you know, they have body bags in them right before you go to bed, because the purpose of sleep is to rest and rejuvenate. And if you're taking other people's stress, even that's been made up by, you know, fiction writers who are writing these great shows, but they don't help us any in terms of managing our stress.
Right. Oh, I totally agree with that. I have a friend and started out as a mentor, a woman named Gina Gaudio Graves, and I won't take a lot of time to talk about Gina, but she is the one who taught me about this, and she claims that she's one of these people that was given, you know, like 12 months to live, and she and her husband sold everything they owned and bought a motorhome, and so they could travel across the country and see the things that she wanted to see before she died, because that she'd been given this death sentence that she had less than 12 months to live. And then somewhere along the way she ran into a massage therapist who talked to her about the importance of positive thinking and really got her into this whole concept of not listening to the news, not watching the news, staying away from these negative things. In fact, she even took a vacation for 6 months, I think it was, where she did not talk to her mother, because she figured out that her mother was a very negative person who always saw the negative side of things. And she says it was really hard to not talk to her mother for 6 months. But this woman who was in a wheelchair, you know, now walks without a cane or a walker or anything. And
that's
it's
wonderful.
All because of that she learned not to be impacted by all the negativity in the world.
Right.
So,
well, I call that in my presentations, avoid liposuctors. That can be people, it can be situations, it can be programming that suck the life out of you.
Right.
And what you need to do first is to, like this woman did, is recognize it may be someone you're related to. And instead of going to liposuctors when you feel like you need to talk to somebody, you need to have funny friends. Funny friends are my number one tip. They will teach you how to laugh at yourself. And if you find them funny, they won't have to even do anything and you'll be laughing with them. And so it's just so important to have those people in your life. So when you're feeling overstressed, rather than making a phone call to somebody who's going to rain on your parade or suck the life out of you, call somebody who'll make you laugh.
Good idea. Okay, I'm going to be quiet here for a second. And please speak up, any of our guests here, and ask us your questions, because we have about 5 minutes left on the call, and we don't want you to fail to have a chance to talk to Leanne.
Absolutely. So is there...
Okay, nobody wants to talk.
Well, it is a little intimidating sometimes for people to talk.
Let me ask
And we don't
want to
stress them out.
you don't want to stress them. I'm delighted to read in your bio about that you're doing this musical. I think that I love the concept that you got yourself trained to do stand-up comedy, and I think that sometime that would be a goal that I'd like to do, is to get myself either to be doing a stand-up comedy routine at least just once, or else I'd like to learn a song and dance routine and be in a musical. So it's totally not what I do now. Totally not me, so it would take a lot of effort on my part. But tell me a little bit about the musical.
Okay, the musical is called Busting Out, and it's all about boobs.
Okay.
It's about women's relationships to their friends and their breasts, because it's a big issue for women, and so we cover, it's funny and it's sad, you know, because that's how life is. And so it's about, you know, you see the characters when they're young, they're in high school, and you see them again when they're almost 50. And so basically, you know, in high school, there's the girl who is me, who is praying to get breasts, because mine didn't arrive till I was 17, which is great, because that means that my breasts are only 30-something right now.
Right, yeah.
And I like that. You know, there's a song called Big Chested, Small Busted, where they're fighting over which is worse situation to be in. There's a song about taking your friends to your mammogram with you. There's a song sung by a boy who is a high school jock, and he's hiding the fact that he's a transsexual, and he really wants boobs of his own. So it's just, it covers the entire gamut, from the fear we have about our breasts. As somebody who has fibrocystic disease, you know, or syndrome, whatever they're calling it these days, you know, and as somebody whose first mammogram caught on fire, my whole experience with that is not the best. And it wasn't the actual machine I was in. It was a machine. It was the developer. But when the tech ran out of the room yelling, "The machine is on fire," I didn't know what machine it was, and I was in one of them.
Yes.
And she left me behind.
Oh,
but I got a great story out of it, and I've been telling it for years. So that's the kind of thing where you let it go by using your laughter. But so that's, it's really, it's a follow-up kind of to my first play, which was produced 2 years ago, which was also about friendship. I'm a woman, and for women, friendship is often a very important relationship in our life. And I think that friendship brings us probably more tears and more laughter than a lot of things in our lives. And so that's kind of one of my focuses. But I'm also interested, and I have a master's in public health, and I wanted a piece of this to be teaching women to pay attention to their breast health, but not to be afraid of their breasts.
Right.
And I think the medical care community often makes us afraid of ourselves.
Oh, especially I think you pay attention to all the medical commercials and the drug commercials. Then you start imagining all these terrible things that are wrong with you.
Oh, see, that's another thing women do better than men, is we worst-case scenario better, because we have more fertile imaginations for negative storytelling. And so one of the techniques I teach is, instead of worst-case scenario telling, or in addition to it, is learn the best case scenario. So for every time you look at something and say, "Oh my God, I've got, you know, prostate disease," even though I don't have a prostate, you have to create a funny story about what it could be that's good.
Okay.
I accidentally sat on $1 million lottery ticket, and it's in my pants causing me this pain. So you must do the opposite. And it helps balance that negative and positive thinking. Because really, when I said that most laughter comes from a playful spirit comes from a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things are highly related.
Excellent. Well, I guess we have only shy guests today, and I apologize for that. But, Leanne, it's been really great talking to you. I've really enjoyed it and had some chuckles along the way. You didn't tell any major ha-ha jokes, but you explained to us how we need to find humor in every part of our lives and the importance of doing that. So I thank you for being my guest and for the great discussion. And
thank you so much for having me. It was a delight.
Sure. And I thank all of our shy guests for joining us, and we'll certainly look forward to continuing to learn more about laughter from you, Leanne, and all of the people who heard this and want to share it with their friends, you know, keep in mind that, in a day or so I will have the call posted onto the website so people can listen to it at their convenience. So thank you very much, Leanne, and I'll have to say goodbye for now.
All right. Thanks, Ann. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.